Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Heidi Moore of The Guardian, in for Brian Lehrer. And our first story of the day is about the Obama administration and drone strikes. The administration was working towards an Inauguration Day deadline to codify the rules for the use of U.S. drones. The urgency for writing the rule book? The possibility of a Romney White House. But that subsided now that President Obama gets to stay in charge. But the fact that they were working on a rule book has some people wondering. Wait a second, wasn't there a rule book already? So as with everything related to drones, it's controversial. Joining us now is the reporter who broke that story, Scott Shane of The New York Times. Scott, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks a lot. Happy to be with you.
Great. So you've been covering this for a while now. Did it surprise you to learn that the Obama administration was just furiously working on a rule book now?
It did. I mean, I think it would probably be unfair to assume that they were just sort of they were operating without rules before. But I think this was a new program, as you know. I mean, the first such targeted killing using a drone was in 2002, and there were really a very small number until 2008. In the last 6 months or so of the Bush administration, they were accelerated pretty significantly. Obama inherited that program and stepped it up in 2010. It's come down a little bit in Pakistan since then, and also expanded it to Yemen and a little bit to Somalia. So there certainly are rules. I mean, people, it's a secret program, but to the degree that you can get a window on it, there are lawyers, lots of lawyers at the CIA, lots of lawyers at the Defense Department, lawyers at the NSC, lots of people who looked this over, and they certainly had kind of working rules, but the rules were shifting. What I'm told is that there was some discomfort with the sort of personal involvement of President Obama and his top counterterrorism advisor, John Brennan, in the sense that they thought you shouldn't have a program like this that's sort of dependent on who is sitting in certain chairs, mm-hmm. and that they wanted to, have it more formally codified and sort of a single place where you could go to say, here are the rules. And I think they also wanted to settle continuing tensions between different departments and different officials about what exactly the limits of these kinds of targeted killings should be.
Right. So it sounds like they were making those rules explicit and then maybe sometimes rewriting some of the rules that already existed. Is that right?
I think that's the idea. I mean, the process is supposedly going on. It was accelerated when it looked like Romney might win. But I think they certainly intend to complete it. I hadn't noticed this. I don't think very many people had. But Obama had actually made a couple of statements suggesting that he really wanted to create what he called a legal framework for these strikes. And he said it once on The Daily Show, of all places, and also to an author named Mark Bowden, who wrote a new book on the bin Laden raid. So he's actually made a couple of public references to it himself.
Right. And so now let me share with you the reaction from Jamil Jaffer, the director of the American Civil Liberties Union's Center for Democracy. He said, to say they are rewriting the rule book implies that there isn't already a rule book. But what they're already doing is rejecting a rule book of international law that's been in place since the Second World War. So is the ACLU right about that? Does your evidence of this work on rule book suggest that they're rejecting international law and writing their own rules?
Well, I think I'm probably not qualified to make that judgment. You'd probably have to go to an international law specialist. I can say that, that the program is extremely controversial internationally. UN officials have repeatedly criticized the U.S. To some degree for the strikes, but even more for the secrecy surrounding the strikes and the failure to explain exactly what the rationale is and what the rules are. And I think in response to that criticism, the administration over the last couple of years has authorized a number of speeches by the counterterrorism advisor, John Brennan, by Eric Holder, the attorney general, and other officials to sort of go out and, in somewhat guarded terms, talk about why they believe this is legal under domestic and international law. There, you know, it is certainly true that there's a controversy and there are a lot of international law specialists who are not satisfied with those explanations and who think that there are big legal problems with these strikes.
Right. And also, I mean, there's the issue that most countries object to the use of unmanned drones. So if there's going to be a UN investigation of the U.S. use of unmanned drones, is the U.S. setting a precedent for the use of these weapons for other countries? Are we setting a bad example?
Well, I think what's raised the stakes is that the U.S. Israel has used armed drones. As far as I know, only the U.S. and Israel so far have actually used armed drones to kill people. But the U.S., obviously, being the 800-pound gorilla, is setting a precedent for other countries. And the Chinese and Russians have armed drones. A number of other countries are trying to buy them or build them. And it's pretty clear that this is going to be, a routine part of various countries' arsenals in the future. So the question has always been, what would the U.S. say if Russia or China, for example, using that same legal reasoning, for example, China, the Chinese, there's a Muslim minority group known as the Uyghurs, and the Uyghurs in some cases have engaged in terrorist acts. But many others are seen as simply, a sort of ethnic minority in opposition. Some of them are located in Kazakhstan over the border from China. Mm-hmm. So if China were to float a drone over Kazakhstan and kill some Uyghurs, what would the U.S. say if the Russians sent drones over the border into Georgia, for example, and tracked down some Chechen terrorists or people they considered to be Chechen terrorists? What would the U.S. say? I think there would be an awkward moment of decision making for the U.S. as it saw other countries begin to, take the same approach. Whether we would say, whether the U.S. government would say, fine with us, or find a way to criticize, who knows. But you can kind of foresee that at some point that's likely to happen.
Right. But it's the U.S. government isn't a monolith on this. I mean, one of the interesting parts about your story was you wrote that there's an internal conflict within the administration about that fundamental role of the drone program. You said they're still debating whether remote control killing should be a measure of last resort against imminent threats to the United States or a more flexible tool available to help allied governments attack their enemies or to prevent militants from controlling territories. So that's a pretty big disagreement, isn't it?
It is, and I don't know that, that's very boiled down. But I was trying to say, here are two ends of a debate, and various officials may find themselves in various points along that line. But I think what actually started my reporting on that story was recognizing that President Obama, who's made just a handful of statements on the drone program, but given the fact that it's classified, we always pay close attention when he actually says something about it. And he has, for the most part, portrayed it as a program that seeks to prevent the next 9/11, in effect, an attack on the U.S. homeland by terrorists. But I think it's fair to say that to the degree that we can, get information on these strikes in Pakistan and Yemen, there's been a bit of mission creep, and they, for the most part, they often target people who you probably could not say are directly plotting against the American homeland. Mm-hmm. And there's sort of a multiple legal justifications that the administration has put forward. One is that we're at war with al-Qaeda and its allies, and if we find members of al-Qaeda or associated groups, basically anywhere we find them, we can kill them the way you would, in World War II have killed a German soldier or a German pilot because they're fighting for the enemy. that's one rationale. Then there's another rationale, which is self-defense against imminent threats, and I think there's certainly lots of different legal arguments, but the practical side of it is, will this be a kind of tool of last resort, an emergency measure that you use to get the kind of bin Ladens of the world, or perhaps the Anwar al-Awlaki, the well-known American-born cleric who was killed in Yemen? Mm-hmm. Or is it okay if the president of Yemen says, hey, these guys are about to attack my troops, and my troops are, you know, your allies. Would you please take them out with your drone? Is that okay? If the Pakistani authorities say, the Pakistani Taliban, which generally speaking targets the Pakistani authorities, there's a camp run by the Pakistani Taliban. We'd really appreciate your taking them out. Is that okay? And usually you can come up with a justification in the sense that the militants in Yemen or the militants in Pakistan at the very least have ties to people who would like to mount an attack against the U.S. Mm-hmm. But they're all sort of unanswered questions, and where you draw the line on this thing and the degree to which it becomes a kind of routine tool, I think, remains to be decided for the long run.
Right. So to sum up what you just said, I mean, you're saying the original justification was to prevent direct attacks by al-Qaeda, but, you know, when we were at war with them, but now it's expanded and we're striking militants who are battling other governments like Pakistani authorities and Yemeni military forces. So we're
exactly
like a counterterrorism force for other governments?
Well, that's what one critic I quoted, a critic of these drone strikes, said, that we've essentially become the counterinsurgency air force of Pakistan, Yemen, and Somalia, that we're sort of fighting. We've become the air wing of their fight, and it's very complicated. People who defend these strikes say that the reason 9/11 happened is that we weren't paying attention or close enough attention to Afghanistan, that a large swaths of Afghanistan were sort of taken over by al-Qaeda. They used it to train and plot, and 9/11 was the result. So that to defend ourselves, we need to make sure that militants of that ilk, even if they're not plotting against the U.S. today, can't seize large territories. We kind of have to preempt the attack, you know, at an earlier stage. You don't want to wait until they take the territory, you know, do the training, build the bomb. You want to prevent them from seizing the territory in the first place. Mm-hmm. And so I've heard that as a justification.
Right. And so how much has President Obama expanded the use of drones since he took office, both in terms of the quantity and in terms of the scope?
Both the scope and the quantity have been, you know, dramatically increased. As I mentioned, these drone strikes began in large numbers in the last 6 months of the Bush administration. They were stepped up somewhat in 2009 after Obama took office, stepped up dramatically to much larger numbers in 2010. They dropped in Pakistan in 2011 and have dropped further in 2012. And part of that is that the Pakistani authorities have been pushing back, who've always sort of had a bit of a double game where they kind of said they reserved the right to condemn the strikes in public, but sort of, you know, say in private, geez, it would be great if you killed that guy and that guy. Mm-hmm. But there has been more public opposition to drone strikes in Pakistan, and Pakistani politicians have responded to that. So that's one reason I think the strikes have decreased, but they still happen regularly in Pakistan. In mm-hmm. Yemen, apart from one strike very early on in 2002 in the Bush administration, there was nothing until December of 2009 under Obama, mm-hmm. and those have steadily climbed since. And so there's you know, regular strikes in Yemen now, and the numbers in Yemen sort of are beginning to rival the numbers in Pakistan.
Okay. So let me ask you some meta questions about the story, about the reporting of the story. And I asked them because the ACLU had sort of denounced these as self-serving leaks from within the administration. But back when you broke the kill list story about the way the administration chooses its drone targets, there were similar cries. So what was your calculation about running with this story, especially when you couldn't get a lot of these sources to go on the record because so much of this is classified?
Well, in the story that you mentioned, which ran at the end of May, we actually did quote a number of people on the record, and some we quoted on the record as being quite critical and skeptical of the value of these strikes. I'm thinking particularly of Dennis Blair, who's the former director of National Intelligence, who after kind of essentially being ousted from office, so perhaps he has you know personal reasons, but you know he's been quite outspoken, thinking that the government has come to rely on these strikes as a sort of panacea or as a answer to all the problems, and he thinks that's a bad idea. We also quoted people like John Brennan on the record, the president's counterterrorism advisor, who's been in the middle of a lot of these decisions. I think the notion that all of these stories result from authorized leaks and are somehow propaganda for the administration is grossly oversimplified. But we obviously do talk to government officials sometimes on background, sometimes on the record, and we reflect what they say, which is presumably part of our job is to is to see what they say in explanation for what actions they're taking. With taxpayers' money and in the name of the tax, the American people. But you try to reach out and find critics to put what they're doing in some kind of critical framework. And it's also certainly every time you see a what we call a blind quote, in other words, a quote not attached to somebody's name. That's attributed to an administration official or a senior administration official or a counterterrorism official. They haven't necessarily spoken to us on an authorized leak basis. Sometimes those people are taking considerable risk to talk to us and don't have their boss's permission, let alone the permission of the White House. So, sometimes what may look like something that's authorized. I mean, the fact is that this program, as I mentioned, remains a classified program. Mm-hmm. It's a peculiar situation because sometimes the President of the United States talks about it, but is technically secret, and that makes it much more complicated to cover than, say, writing about Medicare or something like that.
Yeah, certainly. But if the President has already acknowledged it in public, why do you think this is all still classified?
And that's a great question, which is increasingly asked by people inside the government as well as outside the government. I've had former senior counterterrorism officials, recent former senior counterterrorism officials, say they see no reason why this program is still classified. And I've heard State Department officials say that they believe the accusations of civilian casualties by the drone strikes are greatly exaggerated, and that they feel handicapped in responding to what they consider to be, incorrect or exaggerated claims, because they can't really talk openly about the program. So, it'll be interesting to see in Obama's second term whether that changes at all.
Right. So, did the rule book writing slow down, or did it stop entirely? Are they looking for a set of rules for the current administration, or are they going to hold off for 4 years?
No. I think they absolutely are looking. I mean, they had started back, I believe, in the early summer on this process, and it was accelerated because of the possibility that Romney might win. But it was, it wasn't started because of that. And as far as I know, it's the intention is to complete this process. I think in certainly a matter of months. Mm-hmm. So perhaps on a slightly less rushed timescale than if in fact Romney had won, but I think they certainly appear to be determined to write such a thing. And maybe we can then file a lawsuit to try and get a hold of the rule book. We have a lawsuit pending now, the New York Times does, along with the ACLU, to try and get the legal opinions that exist that support the, that justify the drone strikes. I see no reason why we shouldn't be able to get a hold of the rule book, so maybe we'll try and get that too.
It'll be interesting to see that. So during the 30 issues in 30 days election series, WNYC made a sentiment map where listeners plotted out their feelings about the drone program. You can see it and plot out your own sentiment at WNYC.org. Click on the Brian Lehrer Show. And Scott Shane of the New York Times reporter who broke this story has been our guest. Thanks for coming on with us, Scott.
Thanks for having me.
Up next, report cards are out on New York City's public schools. I'm Heidi Moore, in for Brian Lehrer. Stay with us.